Garth knew something was wrong when he saw the muzzle flashes streaming out of Pancake Flats to the east. He and the rest of the gang were less than half a mile north of the settlement. They had left Winslow and the kid alone back at the place where they had been camped. It was a risk, not leaving a guard behind, but with the way the gang's numbers had shrunk since that damn Bodine and Two Wolves had poked their noses in, Garth wanted every man with him. Winslow was still out cold and the kid was asleep. They weren't going anywhere.
God, those law dogs must have made a break for it with Joshua. Mount up. We'll try to cut them off.
Wait a minute.
Garth whirled on Jeffries.
What the hell's the idea?
We can't get ahead of them, not from this angle. They got too big a lead on us.
What do you reckon we ought to do then?
The only reason for them to go east, away from Yuma, is that they're trying to catch the train before it ever gets to Pancake Flats. Marshal Thorpe must plan to commandeer the locomotive and highball it right through the town instead of stopping.
Garth frowned and chewed his mustache. What Jeffrey said made sense, even though Garth didn't want to admit it.
The train's still got to go through Pancake Flats before it can get to Yuma.
Exactly.
What are you two talking about?
Garth turned toward Gonzalez.
We're going to ride in and take over that two-bit town. Then, when the train comes through, we'll stop it and take Joshua off it.
Those men who went chasing off after the wagon might actually catch it.
All the more reason to go into town and take over. If they come back with Joshua, we'll be ready for them. If they don't, we know what we have to do.
With that, the outlaws mounted up and headed toward Pancake Flats. The night wind stirred the sand on top of the tiny ridge against which Ike Winslow lay with his son, Caleb. In this dry, semi-arid land, the temperature dropped rapidly once the sun went down. And as the air cooled, the sleeping little boy had instinctively nudged closer to his father for warmth. Neither of them was aware of the lean gray shape gliding through the shadows toward them. The coyote was hungry, as coyotes nearly always were. He sensed prey, but he approached carefully, his natural caution outweighing his hunger. The bigger shape wasn't moving, but it didn't smell dead yet. The smaller one shifted around from time to time, but didn't seem to represent any threat. The coyote slunk closer, figuring he would grab the little creature by the leg and drag it away from the bigger one so he could make a leisurely meal of it. One quick dash in, and he would clamp his jaws around the little one's leg. He wouldn't go hungry tonight. Grains of sand from the top of the ridge trickled over Ike Winslow's face. Some of it fell in his left eye. The eye twitched in irritation. His eyes opened, and without thinking about what he was doing, he reached up to rub at the irritated eye. He put a hand on the ground and pushed himself up. Darkness surrounded him, but it was relieved somewhat by the light from millions of stars. That starlight was bright enough for Ike to see the ugly shape crouched only a few feet away.
Get out of here!
The coyote whirled and dashed off into the darkness, unwilling to do battle against such a larger foe. Only then did Ike become aware of the warm little body nestled against him. He looked down in amazement at his son. Ike struggled to sit up, lifting Caleb and holding the boy against his chest. His head hurt like hell, but all his muscles seemed to be working, and he was grateful for that. Caleb was still here, but the outlaws were gone, and so was Maggie. Ike's brain wasn't working at its full capacity yet, but one thought was crystal clear in it. He had to find his wife. He had to find Maggie. Cradling Caleb against him, he fought his way to his feet. He tipped his head back and studied the stars. He knew how to steer by them, so he knew which way was south. That was the way Marshal Thorpe had been taking the prisoner. Ike knew that if Joshua Shade hadn't been freed yet, the gang would have continued in that direction, hoping to rescue their leader. So Ike started that way too. If those bastards had hurt Maggie, he would kill them, each and every one of them, no matter what it took. A part of his mind was aware that it was ludicrous for an injured man with a baby on his hands to make such a vow, but he didn't care. If Maggie was hurt, they would pay. He would see to it. Maggie went up to her room in the hotel, struggling with the decision of what to do next. She had a pretty good idea what the outlaws would do. Any time now, they would show up in Pancake Flats to find out what had happened. She knew she ought to warn the townspeople. But if she did, if the citizens were ready and fought back, then Garth and the others would know who had alerted them to the impending raid. The outlaws were vicious and brutal, but they weren't stupid. They would regard her warning the town as a double cross, Maggie knew, and they could easily take out their anger at her on Ike and Caleb. She couldn't risk that. All she could do was hope that when they rode in and found out that Joshua Shade wasn't there, they would ride out again in search of him. If they did, she hoped they would take her with them. She would never have dreamed she would hope such a thing, but she wanted to be with her husband and son, wherever they were. Maggie opened the curtain and peered out. She wasn't surprised to see the wagon that Sam Two Wolves had driven out of town at such a breakneck pace earlier in the evening. The vehicle was stopped in the middle of the street, with one of the cowboys who had pursued it now on the seat. He must have driven it back into town. A large group of men was gathered around the wagon, some on foot and others on horseback. The riders were the ones who had given chase to the wagon.
Are you sure there was no sign of Shade?
The wagon's empty, I tell you. Those bastards, Bodine and Two Wolves, fooled us.
And where is Shade?
The men didn't have enough time to figure out anything, though, because at that moment, the swift rataplan of hoofbeats sounded loudly from both ends of the street, and suddenly more riders roared into town, bristling with guns.
What the hell?
Maggie recognized the man who had just gunned down that cowboy. He was Willard Garth, the leader of the outlaw gang while Joshua Shade was still a prisoner. She saw Jeffries and Gonzalez as well, along with the other members of the gang. They had split up as they entered the settlement so they could catch the men in the street in a crossfire if need be. Down below in the street, the outlaws still menaced the citizens with drawn guns, Willard Garth bristling with anger.
What happened? Where's the prisoner who was in that wagon?
Your guess is as good as ours, mister. We would have sworn he was in here when we chased the blasted thing out of town, but when we caught up to it was sitting there empty with nobody around.
Was the door still locked when you found it?
What?
The door, damn it! The door on the back of the wagon, was it locked?
Yeah, I reckon it was.
What difference does that make, Jeffries?
If Bodine and Two Wolves had taken Joshua out of the wagon where they abandoned it, they wouldn't have taken the time to put the lock back on the door. My guess is, Joshua wasn't in there when they left town.
Wasn't in there? But that'd mean...
Yeah, they put one over on these folks. Exactly who did you see with the wagon when it left town?
Bodine and Two Wolves, the only ones I actually saw.
Garth put it together. Maggie knew that Jeffries already had.
Blast it. Bodine and Two Wolves tricked you, all right. While they went out front, Thorpe and the deputy went out the back with Joshua. That's gotta be it. They can't make it all the way to Yuma on horseback. They'd have to know we'd catch up to them before they got there.
They can still catch the train once it goes through here.
Yeah, if we let it go through. Maybe that's just what we ought to do.
If you're thinking what I think you're thinking, that's a good idea, Garth. But the train won't be here until morning. What are we supposed to do until then?
I reckon we can have a little fun.
Some of the citizens of Pancake Flats realized who these men were and what Garth meant by that sinister statement. Faced with almost certain doom, no matter what they did, they grabbed for their guns. Maggie had to turn away from the muzzle flashes and the bits of flesh and blood flying in the air as outlaw lead tore through the crowd in the street.
Spread out. I want everybody in town rounded up, but don't set fire to the buildings. Everything's got to look normal when the train gets here in the morning.
Something drew Maggie back to the window, even though she didn't want to look. She cringed as she saw the evidence of the bloodbath that had taken place in the street. Gore-splattered bodies lay everywhere. Instinct must have made Garth glance up. Maggie saw the killer's eyes boring into hers.
Stay there!
Maggie knew that Garth had just killed the proprietor.
Did you know anything about what Bodine and Two Wolves were planning?
If I had known, don't you think I would have found a way to let you know? Where are my husband and son? I know they're not with you and the rest of the gang is here.
Mighty smart, ain't you?
I know how to count, if that's what you mean. What about Ike and Caleb?
Girl, you're like a damn bulldog when you get your teeth into something. Don't you worry about your husband and the young'un. They're in a safe place.
Listen, I've done everything you've asked me to do. I've done everything I can to help you. Why don't you bring them to me and let us go? Or just tell me where they are and I'll go to them.
Nope. We ain't done with you yet, Missy.
My God! What more do you want from me? Just give me back my family!
Not until Joshua Shade is free. And you're wrong. There is something else you can do to help us. Just hush up and listen if you ever want to see that husband and boy of yours again.
Time had no meaning to Ike Winslow now. Only two things existed for him. The incredible ache in his head, and the will to keep putting one foot in front of the other. And Caleb, too. His son was still real to him. He clutched Caleb to his chest, being careful not to drop him. The pain in his head thudded with each step he took, but gradually it began to lessen. He started thinking more clearly, and he asked himself where the outlaws had gone. More importantly, where was Maggie? He knew her well enough to know that she would never desert them unless she was forced to. The outlaws must have taken her with them. But for what purpose? She couldn't help them rescue Joshua Shade, could she? Suddenly, Ike became aware of the horses.
The gang.
Ike tightened his grip on Caleb and launched himself into a stumbling run, trying to stay ahead of whoever was behind him. If he had been able to think a little more logically at the moment, he would have known that he couldn't outrun the riders who were closing in on him. Right now, though, he was just a creature of raw instinct, an animal in flight.
Hey, LaFollette! There's somebody up there! Somebody on foot!
Well, don't just sit there! Go get him!
Ike twisted his head around to gaze behind him in terror, and that caused him to stumble as he saw the dark, looming figure of a man on horseback towering over him.
Son of a bitch! It's an hombre with a baby!
A baby?
Yeah! What do we do about this, La Follette?
Get him on his feet! I don't know what he's doing out here, and I don't like things I don't know.
Strong hands grasped Ike's arms and hauled him upright.
No! Let me go! Leave us alone!
Get the baby!
The men tried to pry Caleb from Ike's arms.
No! All right! Let him keep the kid.
La Follette stepped up to look Ike right in the eye.
Damn it, mister, listen to me! Settle down! We don't mean you any harm.
Who are you, men?
Never you mind about that.
La Follette had dismounted like the others. There was enough starlight for Ike to be able to see that he was a compactly built man in range clothes and with a dark, closely trimmed beard.
Who are you? And what are you doing wandering around out here with a kid?
He's my son. My name is Winslow, Ike Winslow.
That tells us who you are, but not what you're doing here.
I was attacked by Owlhoots. They took my wife, my wagon. I don't know where they are.
Outlaws. You reckon it was Shade's bunch, La Follette? How many were there?
I'm not sure. 15 or 20, maybe more.
Shade's gang's the only one that big in the territory, as far as I know. I reckon this fella was unlucky enough to run into him. It just so happens that we're on the trail of that bunch, mister. You have any idea which way they headed?
I know exactly where they're going. I heard them talking. They headed for a place called Pancake Flats.
The Southern Pacific goes through there. Yeah. Thorpe must be planning on catching the train there. I happen to know that the bridge over Bowtie Canyon washed out a while back, though. And the railroad's just now getting repaired. Thorpe may be stuck up there with his prisoner.
Take me with you.
No offense, mister, but why would we want to saddle ourselves with a wounded man and a baby?
Those bastards have my wife. I'll help you stop them.
You don't look to be in any shape to help anybody do anything, Winslow. You might just slow us down.
I won't. I swear it. If I do, you can leave me behind. Just leave me some food for the boy.
We're a long way from nowhere, La Follette. I wouldn't feel right about leaving a kid out here. I reckon you're right. This hombre can ride double with the lightest man. That's you, Sinclair. All right. I warn you, though, we aren't going to slow down for you. If you can't handle the pace, you will get left behind.
I can handle it. As long as I know you're going after Shade's bunch, I can do whatever I need to.
Yeah, you know, I believe maybe you can. Mount up! We got ground to cover!
Mount Matt and Sam estimated that it was well after midnight when they spotted the elevated water tank ahead of them, next to the railroad tracks. They had circled back north once they were sure they were well clear of Pancake Flats, finally intersecting the steel rails and then following them westward.
I hope Thorpe and Everett made it here with Shade. If they didn't, I'm not sure where we ought to go look for them.
Well, we could backtrack toward the settlement, but we'd be taking a chance on running into Shade's gang.
I almost wish we could. I'd like another crack at those varmints. They'd look mighty good over the sights of my guns.
I know what you mean. But right now, we need to concentrate on getting Shade to Yuma so he can hang.
You know, you got a mighty highly developed sense of responsibility for a carefree redskin who's supposed to be living in harmony with nature and the land and your fellow man.
You've been reading those Eastern newspapers and illustrated weeklies again. You start going on about the noble red man, or lo, the poor Indian, I'll bust you in the nose. Sure, the Cheyenne are a noble people overall, but some of them are pure D jackasses, just like every other breed of folks.
They had almost reached the water tank by now.
Hold it! Who's out there?
It's us, Marshal. Bodine and two wolves.
Just the two of you?
That's right.
Come ahead, then.
Holding a rifle, Thorpe stepped out from behind the shed the railroad used to store tools in a handcar.
Where's Shade?
Thorpe lowered the rifle and jerked a thumb over his shoulder toward the shed.
Tied up around behind that tool shack. Gagged, too. Everett and I got tired of listening to his line of bull. Everett's standing guard over him.
You run into any problems getting out of town?
No. You fellas did a good job of drawing all the attention to yourselves. We made it out the back of the barn with nobody seeing us and rode straight here. How about you? Are either of you hurt?
Nope. Plenty of lead got tossed around, but none of it landed on us.
We led the pursuit a good 2 miles east of the settlement. Then we abandoned the wagon just like we planned and circled around to get back here. No one followed us either. We made sure of that.
It's nice to have a plan work out for a change. Now all we have to do is wait for the train to show up in the morning.
Sam pulled his Winchester from the saddle boot and nodded toward the water tank.
I believe I'll climb up there and stretch out on that little platform. Should be able to see a long way from there.
Where are the horses?
Thorpe pointed to the north.
There's a little wash about 50 yards in that direction. It's just deep enough to hide them, and there's a little grass in the bottom for them to graze on. Still, handy enough to get to in a hurry, though, if we need to.
I'll take these over there and pick at them, too.
Sam was already climbing the rungs that were nailed to one of the thick posts holding up the water tank. He reached the platform next to the long spout that could be lowered when a train stopped to take on water in its boiler. He lay down on his belly, facing back toward Pancake Flats. From there, he had a good view of the tracks as they dwindled into the distance. The night was cool, which was good, because it would help keep him awake, Sam thought. He was tired, but there would be time enough to rest when Joshua Shade was safely behind the walls of Yuma Prison, awaiting his fate. The town of Pancake Flats looked normal in the morning as the sun rose, scattering its widespread golden light over the Arizona landscape. All the bodies had been hauled into the livery stable and stacked like cordwood, and frightened citizens working at gunpoint had shoveled dirt over the pools of blood in the street. Everybody in town had been disarmed and rounded up, just as Garth had ordered, and herded into the hotel. Once all the signs of the previous night's violence had been covered up, the men who had done the work were marched back into the hotel. If anyone wondered what had happened to the woman who had registered as Jessica Devlin, nobody said anything about it. She was nowhere to be seen, though. Garth singled out the ticket clerk who worked at the Southern Pacific Depot.
Come along with me, hombre.
What do you want with me?
I'll explain that when we get where we're going.
They walked down the street in the light of the rising sun toward the train station. As they went inside, Garth heard the telegraph key clicking.
Go see what they're saying.
The clerk hurried over to the door that led into the little cubicle behind the ticket window where the telegraph apparatus was located. He sat down, picked up the pencil and pad that rested on the table beside the key, and began listening intently, writing down the tapped-out words that came over the wire. Garth crowded into the room behind him.
What are they saying?
It's the district office in El Paso. They're advising everyone along the line that the repairs to the trestle at Bowtie Canyon are finished and that the westbound train is on its way. It should be here in less than an hour.
Bueno.
What are you going to do? Are you going to rob the train when it gets here?
That's a thought. Since traffic along the line's been backed up, there might be a pretty good pile of loot in the express car. but we got bigger fish to fry today. The train's going to stop and pick up a few passengers. It'll be on its way just like normal.
I don't understand.
Me and some of the other fellas are getting on that train. Nobody on there will know who we are, and you ain't going to tell them.
No, sir. No, indeed.
We figure Marshal Thorpe will be waiting somewhere west of here to board the train with Joshua. Once they're aboard, we'll take it over and set our boss free.
You know, I'll bet you're right. Matt Bodine was in here yesterday asking about flag stops to the west. I gave him a map. That map belongs to the railroad, too, you know, and I didn't get it back.
And once we're gone, you won't be trying to send any wires to warn folks about what's going on now, will you?
No, sir, of course not. I wouldn't do that. You have my word.
Your word ain't good enough, amigo. I'm gonna make sure.
Please, I swear.
We're gonna pull down the telegraph wires both ways and smash that apparatus to boot. The rest of the gang will drive off every horse in town as they're leaving, too. You folks will have a long walk if you want to go anywhere.
I was afraid you were going to...
Well, Gonzalez wanted to just kill you all and burn the town down to make sure. I don't figure that's necessary, though. And the smoke could be seen for a hell of a long way. Somebody on that train might spot it behind them and wonder what was going on. Don't want to spook anybody before we have to.
Thank you. We appreciate you not killing us.
Just remember that and play your part. No funny business while the train's here.
No funny business.
Jeffries came in along with the Winslow woman. Maggie wore a nice traveling outfit now, complete with a hat with a couple of feathers on it, perched on her fair hair. The clothes had come from one of the stores in town, all of which had been looted of everything the outlaws thought they might need, along with all the cash on hand, of course.
You ready to do your part, Missy?
Maggie nodded.
I don't understand why you need me, though. I can't really do anything.
Except to keep Matt Bodine distracted and off his guard. Do a good job of that, and you'll be back with your husband and kid by the time this day is over.
You swear?
Sure. You got my word.
Garth glanced at the clock on the wall.
We still got a while to wait. Might as well go sit down on that bench over yonder.
I'll keep you company.
In addition to Garth and Jeffries, three more of the outlaws had joined them on the platform, leaving nine men to guard the prisoners in the hotel. The remaining outlaw was sitting in the clerk's cubicle out of sight with a gun in his hand to make sure the man didn't try any tricks. Garth had picked three men who didn't quite look as hard-bitten as the others. In their worn range clothes, they could have been cowboys catching a ride on the train in hopes of finding jobs somewhere else. In his dusty black suit, Jeffries looked like a businessman or possibly a gambler.
Train's coming.
In less than 5 minutes, the train rolled into the station. As the cars jolted and clattered to a stop, the conductor, in his blue suit and black cap, swung down from the steps attached to one of the passenger cars.
Howdy, Harry. Any freight going out?
Not today, Brett. Just a few passengers.
With the trestle being down and no trains rolling for a while, I figured the freight might have backed up.
I guess nobody's shipping anything right now.
All right, folks. Everybody on board. If there's no freight to load, we won't be stopped long.
Maggie carried a carpet bag that had some clothes stuffed in it just to give it some weight. The outlaws had their saddles, rifles, and war bags. A porter slid back the door of the baggage car and loaded the bags while the passengers climbed on board. The clerk had prepared authentic tickets for all of them, so the conductor had nothing to be suspicious about there. He punched the tickets and ushered the passengers into the car. As Maggie passed him, he touched the brim of his cap.
I hope you're comfortable traveling with us, ma'am. If you'd like a pillow or a blanket, just let me know.
Thank you, sir.
Next stop where you can stretch your limbs will be Tucson. We stop once between here and there, but only to take on water.
That will be fine.
Maggie sat down on an empty bench. There were quite a few of them because the train wasn't crowded. Garth lowered himself onto the bench across the aisle from her, evidently wanting to keep an eye on her. From the things she had heard Garth and Jeffries talk about, and the things that Garth had admitted openly, she had a pretty clear idea of the outlaws' plan. After isolating the town by cutting the telegraph wires and hazing off all the horses in the settlement, the rest of the gang would follow the train. Garth and the other outlaws on board would take over the train as it approached the water stop where Thorpe, Bodine, and Two Wolves had to be waiting with Joshua Shade. They wouldn't know anything was wrong until it was too late. Once they were on board and settled in for the trip, the outlaws would stop the train again, and the rest of the gang would swoop in to reinforce Garth and his men. The marshal and his companions would be taken by surprise and trapped. Once Shade was in charge again, the gang would rebuild itself in no time, replacing the men who had been lost in the fighting so far, and before you knew it, they would be terrorizing the territory again under the leadership of the crazed preacher-turned-bloodthirsty killer. The station platform seemed to move past and then suddenly was gone. Pancake Flats fell behind the train. They were on their way to the final act in this bloody drama. Sam dozed off every now and then as he lay on the water tank platform, but those few catnaps were the only sleep he got that night. He was young and resilient, though, so he actually felt fairly well rested the next morning. Because of that, he was alert enough to spot the approaching locomotive while it was still quite a distance away.
"Train's coming!"
Matt stepped out from behind the shed.
"I'll go fetch the horses."
Sam tucked his Winchester under his arm and started climbing down the ladder. By the time he reached the ground, Thorpe and Everett had come out from behind the shed as well, prodding Joshua Shade in front of them with their rifles. Shade's wrists were tied together, and several turns in the rope had been taken around his body, pinning his arms at his sides. A short length of rope bound his ankles so that he could walk, but would fall on his face if he tried to run. The gag was still in place. Sam had no doubt that the loco outlaw would be cussing and ranting up a storm if not for the gag. Probably foaming at the mouth, too. Shade had the look of a rabid animal about him. Matt came back from the arroyo leading all the horses.
"He doesn't look so dangerous now, does he?"
"I won't believe that Shade is past the point of hurting anybody else until he's swinging from a hang rope."
"It shouldn't be too much longer now. The train will be here in a few minutes, and by tonight he'll be safely locked up at Yuma. How long do you think it'll take for the sentence to be carried out, Marshal?"
"I don't know, but it can't be soon enough to suit me. If not for my orders, I'd throw a rope over one of the beams on that water tank and haul him up right here and now."
"That sounds like a good idea to me, too."
"I didn't say we were actually gonna do it. Shade's gonna hang, but it'll be legal. If you wanted a lynching, you should have let that mob have him the first time back in Arrowhead."
"Take it easy, Marshal. Nobody wants a lynching."
Thorpe and Everett forced Shade forward, each of them gripping one of the outlaw's shoulders. Matt and Sam flanked them and held their Winchesters ready. Garth had been keeping an eye on the passing landscape and estimating how far the train had come from Pancake Flats. He knew from what the ticket clerk had told him that the water stop was 20 miles west of the settlement, and he knew about how long it should take them to reach it. When he figured there was only a few miles to go, he stood up and started toward the front of the car, giving minuscule nods to Jeffries and his other men as he passed them. Jeffries waited a moment and then followed him. Garth hadn't decided how far to let things go before he forced the engineer to stop the train again. Before it got to Tucson, that was for damn sure. He wanted Bodine, Two Wolves, and Thorpe good and relaxed before he made his move, though. He wanted those sons of bitches to think all their troubles were behind them. Garth had seen the conductor pass through the car a few minutes earlier, heading toward the front of the train. He and Jeffries caught up to the man at the front of the first passenger car, with only the coal tender between them and the engine. As they stepped out onto the platform where the conductor was standing, the blue-uniformed man nodded to them.
"Something I can do for you, gents?"
Garth jammed the Colt's muzzle into the man's belly.
"You can do what you're told, or I'll blow your guts right through your backbone."
"Is this a holdup?"
"Nope. You're taking my par and me up to the engine, you understand? You cooperate with us, nobody will get hurt."
"All right. Just leave the passengers alone."
"Don't go giving orders. Now move."
The conductor turned and started making his way along the narrow walkway built onto the side of the coal tender. Garth held the gun in his right hand, and he used the left to hold the grab irons along the way. Jeffries came along behind him, also with a drawn gun. They reached the end of the walkway. The conductor stepped around onto the platform at the front of the tender, which was closely coupled to the locomotive. The engineer sat on his stool, leaning over slightly to peer out the window along the tracks as he held his hand loosely on the throttle. The fireman was on the other side of the cab, leaning on his shovel at the moment. The fireman spotted Garth and Jeffries first and started to lift his shovel as if he intended to use it as a weapon. Jeffries stepped toward Garth and the conductor and leveled his gun at the man.
"Don't do it, Fred."
"What the hell?"
"Careful, Fred. This bastard's got a gun in my back."
"Since we don't need you anymore,
I don't cotton to being called a bastard. Might as well tell you now, I can run one of these contraptions if I have to. So don't think I won't plug you if I have to.
What you want? It's a robbery?
Nope. Just keep this locomotive rolling all the way to that water stop up ahead. When we get there, you can take on water just like you always do. Nobody has to know anything's going on except us. There's one more thing. I think some fellas are going to be waiting there to get on the train. You'll let them do it, understand?
Friends of yours?
One of them is. The others? Not hardly.
Garth moved so that he could cover both the engineer and the fireman, then nodded towards the unconscious conductor.
Get that uniform on, Jeffries. I don't reckon any of these law dogs ever got a good enough look at you to recognize you.
Jeffries nodded and holstered his revolver. He bent and began pulling the blue coat off the conductor. By the time the water tank had come into view up ahead, Jeffries had the uniform on and was tugging the black cap down on his head.
How do I look? Good enough to fool those varmints. Just stay out of the passenger cars and away from the brakes. We don't want any of them to realize you ain't the real conductor.
Garth looked at the engineer.
Slow and easy. Just like normal.
Garth risked a glance toward the water tank and felt a surge of excitement and anticipation as he spotted the small group of men standing near the tracks. The wind blew the long hair of the man in the center. That would be Joshua. He was flanked by Thorpe and some nameless deputy who were hanging on to him. Bodine and two wolves were on either side of them. The locomotive was almost even with the water tank now. With practiced ease, the engineer brought it to a smooth halt.
Bodine and two wolves, they're gone!
The train eased to a stop next to the water tank.
Something's wrong, Marshal. Better get Shade back undercover while Sam and I check it out.
What?
The Blood Brothers were already moving. Matt and Sam went in different directions. Sam ran around the front of the engine, leaping across the tracks in front of the cowcatcher, while Matt raced alongside the train. When he came to the first passenger car, he bounded up the steps to the platform at the front of it. Sam reached the engine cab, which was partially open on the sides. Through that opening, he saw the men crowded into the cab, including an hombre dressed only in long underwear who lay on the floor of the cab, either unconscious or dead. The engineer and the fireman were easy to spot. So was the conductor. That left one man who had a gun in his hand, a craggy-faced, mustached gent who obviously had no business being up there.
Two wolves!
Sam snapped the Winchester to his shoulder. The rifle bullet drilled into the outlaw's chest, flinging him back against the engineer. Reacting swiftly, the engineer brought his hand down in a slashing blow against the gunman's wrists, knocking the revolver loose. Then, as the outlaw began to sag, the engineer clouted him with a big fist to the jaw. Sam lowered the Winchester and looked toward the conductor, intending to ask the man if he knew how many other outlaws were on the train. A shock went through him as he saw the gun in the conductor's hand. Meanwhile, Matt had plunged headlong into the first passenger car.
I'm a lawman, take it easy.
Matt's eyes scanned the passengers and didn't see anybody who looked like an outlaw. If the gang had taken over the train, there had to be more of them somewhere in the cars. Matt ran toward the rear of the train. He came into the next car of the train.
Everybody down!
The passengers dived for the floor, leaving three hard-bitten-looking hombres who had stood up to blaze away at him. Matt dropped the rifle as he went into a crouch and palmed both Colts from the thong-down holsters attached to the crossed gun belts. The third and last man got off a final shot that came close enough to knock Matt's hat off his head, but that was the last chance the outlaw got. With his pulse pounding heavily in his head, Matt slowly lowered his smoking guns. All three of the outlaws were down, their bloody forms motionless in death.
Drop it.
Shocked, Matt looked down to see the blonde who had introduced herself to him as Jessica Devlin back in Pancake Flats. She knelt in the aisle holding the rifle he had dropped.
Miss Devlin!
Drop your gun, Mr. Bodine. I don't want to shoot you, but I will if I have to.
Look, I'm not an outlaw. In fact, I'm working with the law.
Jessica came to her feet, keeping the rifle leveled at him. The barrel shook a little. The Winchester was heavy, and she probably wasn't used to handling a rifle.
Where is Joshua Shade?
Shade? You don't mean...
Just tell me where he is.
Maggie couldn't stop her head from jerking around toward the sounds. Matt leaped forward, reaching for the Winchester's barrel. He got his fingers around it and wrenched it upward just as the rifle blasted. Matt jerked the rifle from her hands. He leaped to one of the windows and saw the riders galloping past, firing into the cars. Matt recognized several of them from trading shots with them on previous occasions and knew they were the rest of Shade's gang. He didn't know exactly what the plan had been, but obviously the outlaws had split up, some of them boarding the train as passengers while the others waited for the shooting to start before rushing in to take a hand in the fight. Matt broke out the window with the Winchester's barrel and poked it through. With a sudden lurch, the train jolted into motion.
Now what the hell?
Willard Garth wasn't dead yet, which meant he might still succeed in freeing Joshua. Garth started struggling to his feet, but was only halfway there when a hand grasped his arm and helped him up. Garth blinked blearily at Jeffries, who still wore the conductor's outfit and was covering the engineer and the fireman, who had been forced at gunpoint to the other side of the cab. As Garth spotted Sam Two Wolves lying on the ground beside the engine with a dark blood stain on his buckskin shirt, he felt a surge of satisfaction.
Give me my gun.
You hurt, Garth.
Hell, I know that. Just give me my gun.
Jeffries picked up the fallen revolver and pressed it into Garth's hand.
I'll watch these two. You go get Joshua.
Thorpe and that deputy hustled around behind that shed.
You can take them by surprise. They'll think you're the conductor.
You'll be all right here?
Sure, just
go get Joshua.
Jeffries nodded, then leaped down from the cab and dashed toward the shed. Garth's head was swimming, and he knew he couldn't count on staying conscious for any length of time.
Won't need you two anymore.
Garth turned to the locomotive's controls. As he had mentioned earlier, he had driven a train before, back in the days before he became an outlaw, and not much had changed since then. Bodine was in the passenger cars, shooting it out with the men who had been left there. The shots from the shed meant that Jeffries had found Joshua. Garth gritted his teeth against the pane and leaned against the window in the side of the cab as he waited to see who would come out from behind the little building. Jeffries appeared a moment later, leading an obviously unsteady Joshua Shade. Joshua's feet were free, and he was unwinding some cut ropes from around his wrists. The gag in his mouth was gone.
Praise the Lord!
Shade climbed into the cab, helped up by Jeffries.
You freed me from the heathens, Brother Willard.
Good to see you, boss. What about Thorpe and the deputy?
I plugged both of them. You were right, Garth. They thought I was the conductor and didn't know any different until I'd led in them. I never saw anybody look so surprised as that damn marshal.
Garth heard more shooting and looked back to see the rest of the gang slamming bullets at the passenger cars as they galloped past. That was a good distraction, but not necessary now.
Let's get out of here.
Garth shoved the throttle forward.
Jeffries, go back behind the tender and uncouple the rest of the cars. No need in hauling them with us.
Jeffries nodded and started along the walkway on the side of the coal tender as the train began to pick up speed.
You're hurt, Brother Willard.
Don't matter. All that matters is we finally got you away from those damn lawmen, Joshua.
Yes, and again, praise the Lord for that. We're going back to Arrowhead and Pancake Flats and wipe those dens of iniquity off the face of the earth. They deserve to be punished by holy fire for how they treated a humble servant of the Lord.
Gonna have to build the gang back up first. We lost a bunch of men trying to get you loose.
Very well. The Lord's work takes time.
Garth hunched over against the pane as another coughing fit seized him. As it faded away, he realized that Joshua hadn't thanked him yet. But it didn't matter. He'd been willing to do whatever it took to save his friend from the hangman, even if it cost his own life. Still, a simple gracias would have been nice. Garth's head slumped onto his chest, and he died then with his hand on the throttle. The weight of his hand slowly shoved the control forward, and the train began to pick up even more speed. A few minutes earlier, the eyes of Sam Two Wolves had flickered open as he sprawled there on the ground next to the locomotive. He hadn't been unconscious long, only a minute or so, and the memory of being shot by the man in the conductor's uniform came back to him instantly. His vision was blurred at first, but he had heard more shots. His sight began to clear, and as he looked up at the cab through slitted eyelids, he saw the craggy-faced outlaw leaning against the side of the cab by the controls, and Joshua Shade being helped up into it by the phony conductor. Sam wanted to find his gun and started shooting at them, but his muscles flatly refused to work. The shock of being wounded had paralyzed them momentarily. Having no real choice in the matter, Sam lay there gathering his strength. He heard shooting all up and down the other side of the train. As the cab pulled away from him, Sam rolled onto his side and then over onto his belly. His hands and feet pushed against the ground, lifting him into a crouch. Sam stumbled toward the coal tender. It had a walkway with a short railing on each side. Sam lunged toward it and reached out. He caught hold of the railing and pushed off hard with his feet, throwing a leg up onto the walkway. Then he hung there, his other leg dragging on the gravel roadbed next to the rails, unable to pull himself up any farther. If he let go, he might fall under the wheels and be chopped to pieces. With his head thrown back, his teeth bared in an agonized grimace, and cords of muscles standing out in his neck, he struggled to save himself from that grisly fate. Nat left Jessica Devlin where she was and ran forward through the passenger car. He flung the door open and hurried out onto the platform, carrying the Winchester at a slant across his chest. The first thing he saw was the conductor kneeling on the narrow platform at the rear of the coal tender. Matt realized with a shock that the man was struggling to uncouple the rest of the train from the locomotive and the tender. There was no good reason for him to be doing that.
Bodine!
Knowing now that the conductor had to be one of the outlaws, Matt snapped the rifle down and fired from the hip. The phony conductor fired. Matt dove through the open door behind him. Lying in the aisle, Matt tried to draw a bead with the rifle again. But before he could do so, the outlaw finally succeeded in yanking loose the pin that coupled the cars together. He darted back around onto the walkway that led to the engine as a gap suddenly opened up between the tender and the first passenger car. Matt knew he had only seconds to act. One foot smacked down on the tender's tiny rear platform. Matt grabbed for one of the iron handholds fastened to the wall of the car. Matt leaned against the back of the tender. After a moment, Matt turned around, pressed his back against the rear of the tender, and pulled his right-hand gun so he could reload it. He looked back along the tracks and saw the rest of the cars beginning to slow down even more as the momentum wore off. Unfortunately, he also saw the rest of Shade's gang, half a dozen men, galloping after the locomotive and tender. Maggie realized that the train was slowing down. She didn't know what else was going on, but she knew they had left the water stop behind them. Shame burned inside her. She had tried to kill Matt Bodine. She would never have believed that she could take a human life, especially the life of someone who had never done her any harm. Now she ignored the chaos and confusion inside the car and ran toward the exit, intending to see if she could tell what was going on. She stepped out onto the platform as the train slowed even more. But not all the train, she realized. She clung to the railing, leaned out, and saw the locomotive and the coal tender pulling away. They had been uncoupled from the rest of the cars. The outlaws on horseback were giving chase and firing at a man who crouched on the narrow platform at the back of the tender. She recognized him as Matt Bodine. Matt began climbing, using the grab irons bolted to the side of the car as ladder rungs. As Maggie watched, Bodine reached the top and flung himself over, dropping onto the coal in the tender. She didn't see what happened after that, because the cars that had been cut loose ground to a halt, and Maggie heard the pounding of more hoofbeats. She looked frantically toward the rear of the train, wondering what awful thing was going to happen next. Instead, she saw a miracle. She saw her husband and son. More men were galloping alongside the tracks, and riding double with one of them was Ike. He had Caleb clutched tightly to him with one arm while he hung on with the other.
Maggie! Maggie!
A bearded man who seemed to be leading the newcomers reined to a halt beside the platform where Maggie stood.
Ma'am! You know where Joshua Shade is!
I think he must be up there in the engine!
The man nodded and spurred his horse into a run again. The men with him had halted for a moment too, and Ike seized that opportunity to slide down from the horse he had been riding. Now he came toward the platform in a stumbling run.
Maggie! Maggie!
Heedless of her own safety, she leaped to the ground and ran to meet him. They flung their arms around each other and held on for dear life, as if they would never let go.
Are you all right?
I am now.
And Caleb?
He's fine.
Oh, thank God. Thank God. Who are those men with you?
I don't know, but they've been looking for Shade and his gang. I think they must be lawmen of some sort.
A sudden chill went through Maggie. Would she be arrested for trying to help the outlaws? She had been forced to do it, but the authorities might not see it that way. She didn't care what happened to her, she decided. She knew now that her husband and son were safe, and that was all that really mattered. She found herself hoping, though, that after all this, Joshua Shade wouldn't get away. Kneeling on the pile of coal, Matt stuck his head over the tender side wall and leveled his Colt at the outlaws as they charged after the locomotive. Suddenly, he heard shots coming from somewhere close by. It was hard to tell because of the noise of the engine, but he thought the shots came from the other side of the tender, at the back. Matt scrambled over the coal and looked over the wall. A shock went through him as he saw Sam crouched on the walkway on this side of the tender, leaning around the rear corner to fire at the pursuing outlaws.
Sam!
Matt!
Yeah! You all right?
Just a scratch. Nothing to worry about. You?
I'm fine. Shit!
This bullet came from behind him, though. The bastards had him in a crossfire.
He's in the tender! Get up there and kill him!
Shade was at the controls of the locomotive now, but he wasn't slowing it down any. Jeffries wasn't sure that Shade even knew what he was doing. As the engine continued to rocket along the tracks.
Kill Bodine!
Jeffries stepped over Garth's body and started climbing the rungs fastened to the outside of the tender's front wall. When he reached the top, he saw Bodine at the back of the coal car. Jeffries threw a leg over the wall and perched there atop it as he swung up his gun. The shot went wide, then Bodine was turning and his gun came up with blinding speed. Matt saw the black-rimmed hole appear in the phony conductor's forehead. Then the man fell out of sight. He turned his attention back to the rest of Shade's gang, but as he rested his gun barrel on the tender's wall, he saw that the outlaws had their hands full with a new battle. Men on horseback, men Matt had never seen before, had overtaken the desperados and attacked them from the rear. Shade's men had no choice but to turn and fight back. The fight was fierce, but lasted only moments. As the locomotive and tender continued to pull away, the smoke cleared enough for Matt to see that all the outlaws were done. A handful of the men who had attacked them were still mounted, but their losses had been heavy too. The survivors spurred after the locomotive and tender. Matt turned and began climbing over the coal toward the front. He reached the front end of the tender and looked over the wall, then ducked as Joshua Shade leveled a pistol. Shade pushed the throttle even harder, opening it up all the way. Matt glanced in the direction of the other shot, and he saw Sam thrusting a Colt around the front corner of the tender. Sam put the steam pressure gauge. The steam washed right over Shade's gun hand, and the burning pain made him drop the gun. Matt vaulted over the top of the tender and landed lithely in the cab. Matt swung his pistol in a backhanded blow that slashed across Joshua Shade's face. Matt lunged for the throttle and pulled it back, then grabbed the brake and hauled on it as hard as he could. Sam swung around into the cab and kicked away the gun Shade had dropped just to make sure the lunatic didn't get his hands on the weapon again. Then both of the Blood Brothers stood there covering Shade as the train gradually stopped.
Looks like you'll live to hang after all, Shade.
The four strangers who had survived the battle with the outlaws galloped up alongside the cab.
That's where you're wrong, mister!
The bearded leader and the others suddenly trained their guns on Matt and Sam.
You're all dying, right here and now!
Matt and Sam reacted instinctively. Sam kicked Shade's feet out from under him and dropped him to a crouch next to the outlaw. Matt filled both hands with his iron. Sam drilled one of the men and knocked him out of the saddle. Matt ventilated the other, then staggered as a bullet creased his thigh. Matt's last round blasted a hole in the middle of the gunman's forehead, but that left the bearded man still alive, and Sam's Colt had just clicked on an empty chamber, too. The bearded man chopped down with his gun, ready to fire again. The man jerked in the saddle, arching his back. Matt leaned out to look back along the tracks. A man on horseback sat about 100 yards behind the locomotive. Matt recognized him as Marshal Asa Thorpe. Smoke trickled from the barrel of the rifle Thorpe had pressed to his shoulder. Slowly, Thorpe lowered the rifle and then rode forward. As he came closer, Matt saw the dark stain on the lawman's shirt and knew that Thorpe was wounded. Matt turned and saw that Sam was checking on Shade.
Was he hit?
No, he's fine. Just stopped Cole from hitting his head on the floor when I knocked him down. Matt, what just happened here?
Beats the hell out of me.
Matt thumbed fresh shells into his gun and then climbed down from the cab as Thorpe rode up and reined to a halt.
How bad are you hurt, Marshal?
I live. Some son of a bitch pretending to be the conductor creased me and knocked me out. I reckon he thought I was dead. He killed Everett, though. I'm sorry to say, then got away with Shade.
Shade's up here in the cab. He's all right. But who are these hombres?
This one's still alive. Let's ask him.
Matt hunkered on the other side of the bearded man and lifted his head.
Who are you, mister? And why did you just try to kill Joshua Shade?
It wasn't Shade. We were really after. We were paid to kill Thomas Jeffries.
Who in blazes is Thomas Jeffries?
I saw him up there in the cab, dressed like a conductor.
He was one of Shade's men, all right.
He had a $50,000 price on his head.
Who would put a bounty that big on some owl hoot? It wasn't even the leader of the gang.
It was his father.
His father?
Yeah. Senator Jeffries. Bastard got me and all my men killed. Don't figure we owe him any loyalty anymore.
Don't die, you son of a bitch. You've got some more explaining to do.
But it was too late. Thorpe was talking to a dead man. Two days later, at dawn, Joshua Shade was led out of his cell at Yuma Prison and taken under heavy guard to the courtyard, where a gallows awaited him. Under an arched door at the edge of that courtyard stood Matt Bodine, Sam Two Wolves, and Marshal Asa Thorpe.
As best we've been able to piece it together, Senator Jeffries knew his son had turned outlaw and had been trying to find him. He got word that the boy was riding with Shade's gang just about the same time the news reached Washington that Shade had been captured and was going to be put on trial. The senator figured that Shade's gang would try to rescue him, so he hired that killer, La Follette, to put together a group of gunmen and follow Shade's gang.
So they could get Jeffries away from the gang?
Thorpe shook his head. Out in the courtyard, Shade and his guards had almost reached the 13 steps that led up to the gallows.
No, that fella Winslow overheard enough while he was with La Follette's bunch to put it together with the other things we know and figure that they were supposed to kill Thomas Jeffries. Shade, the rest of the gang, and anybody who knew anything about Jeffries riding with them.
That explains the bounty. My God, to think that a man would pay to have his own son assassinated just to spare himself some political trouble.
The senator didn't want it known that his son was an owl hoot. He was willing to go to any length to cover that up, including putting pressure on the Justice Department to set me up as a Judas goat.
So you weren't ever supposed to get Shade here. The senator figured Shade's gang would kill you and free Shade, and then La Follette and the rest of those hired guns would wipe out the gang.
That's about the size of it. They had to wait until Shade was back with the gang before they made their move, though. Senator Jeffries couldn't risk leaving Shade alive to maybe reveal the truth.
Did Shade even know that Jeffries was related to a senator?
I couldn't tell you. Shade won't, or can't, answer any questions. He's completely lost his mind now.
That hombre's crazier than a hydrophobia skunk. Something must be rotting his brain.
It won't have a chance to rot much longer. Or in one way, I guess it will. It'll rot along with the rest of him.
The grim-faced hangman lowered a black shroud over Shade's head.
What about the Winslows? Would they be facing any charges for helping Shade's gang try to rescue him?
The federal government's not going to prosecute them. You want to press charges against the lady for trying to take a shot at you?
After what she went through? Hell no.
What's going to happen to the senator now?
I suppose they'll bury him. According to a telegram I just got a little while ago, he put a bullet in his head last night when he realized the whole thing was coming out in the open.
All that killing over politics.
Well, it wasn't all about politics. Some of it was because Shade and his men were a bunch of low-down skunks.
Well, yeah, that too.
They looked out into the courtyard. The hangman had the noose around Shade's neck now.
Do you really want to watch this?
You know, I don't reckon I do. So long, Marshal.
Where are you two headed?
Someplace a long way from here.
Matt and Sam turned and walked away along a passage that led to the prison's front gate. Neither of the Blood Brothers looked back.
Blood Bond, The Deadly Road to Yuma, is a graphic audio production. Copyright 2009, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation, all rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation, all rights reserved. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, David Coyne, Terrence Aselford, Tim Getman, Casey Platt, Tom Simpson, Ken Jackson, Mort Shelby, Chris Rowan, Brian Patton, and Jonathan Watkins. Adapted for graphic audio and directed by Johann Detweiler. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Johann Detweiler. Original score by Johann Detweiler and Brian Patton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Blood Bond, be sure to look for William W. Johnstone's The Last Gunfighter and Mountain Man series. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net. And read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com.
Attention all hands, attention all hands. This is the captain. I regret to inform all of you that Speaker of the Grand Council, Lord Thornbuckle, is dead. Assassinated on Castle Rock.
It's been confirmed by 3 separate agencies, Malone.
How many were killed or injured?
Lord Thornbuckle and 3 security personnel killed. Sam Mahoney is alive, but in critical condition.
A terrible, terrible situation.
Terrible for some, certainly.
So we're too late and somebody got him first.
So what do we do?
Get the rest of them. If he's dead, maybe they won't be watching so close. I could take that yellow-haired slut.
We have a mission. A new mission. Got it?
Yes, sir.
Miranda, what have they told you about it? About who did it?
Nothing. I know the news media says it was the New Texas Militia.
Miranda, I don't think it was the New Tex Militia.
No.
Since Lord Thornbuckle is dead and cannot reply, some might consider it unnecessary to detail the charges that might have been brought against him, but I believe in full and fair disclosure. The fact is, the Familius Regnant is sick, on its deathbed. And if we don't act quickly, the patient could die.
How did Hobart Consoline become Speaker?
I'm Ranger Briley, but you can call me Kate.
What do you make of our Speaker?
He's nobody I'd buy a ranch from. Now, why don't you get down to what you really wanted to talk about?
I want to find out who killed my father, and what kind of hold Hobart Consuline has on my Uncle Hollis, who's after my father's estate.
Now that's a goal we can work on.
We?
Of course we. Hell's bells, sweetheart. I'm not going to leave you to hunt this hog alone. It's time I went to work.
Serrano Legacy, Book 6, Change of Command, Part 1, from Graphic Audio.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Be careful, Barry.
Don't worry, I'll be right back.
My God.
Why am I brought from universe to universe to watch its destruction?
Anyone have any idea what this is about?
I am the Monitor, and I brought you here to save the multiverse.
Only then, in a single, swift, and surprising stroke.
I will kill the man I love.
Damn you! I just wanted to see her one more time!
This is war, Superman.
This ends now!
Why are you fighting me? You're already dead!
I need more power! I need more strength!
Time for you, your worlds, and your universes to die!
Iris.
Crisis on Infinite Earths and all names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2009 DC Comics. All rights reserved.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net. where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net.